G'day and welcome to Two Coaches and a Coffee. I'm Jason Weber and Darren Burgess alongside me, albeit in a state that borders where I am at present. How are you, mate?
Yeah, good. And that sounds close, but it would take me about 27 hours to drive to you.
Yeah, it is. It's unnerving how big our country is. And it's funny, not funny, but interesting that you sort of look at the States as well. And the States is about geographically similar landmass to Australia. But when you go, it's not until you go there and you try and move from state to state and you try, like I was visiting other universities and teams and whatever, it takes such a long time to get anywhere.
Yeah.
And it's the same here. Like, man, where WA is the most isolated capital city in the world.
Yep.
And it would take me 3 hours to fly. 2.5 hours to fly to Adelaide. So yeah, man, we're a fair way away. Coffee would be well and truly cold by the time we got there, or I'd need
Yeah,
another one, one or
exactly.
the other.
Exactly.
I'm already out. I just went through another batch. I could probably
Well,
go another one.
5 o'clock in the afternoon. So if I had a coffee, I'd be in trouble. But what were we going to talk about? One thing I was going to ask you about is periodization. When I went through university at University of New South Wales, just way back when, you know, the Tudor Bomber periodization assignment that I had to do for
Oh,
Paul Batman in
yeah.
exercise program, whatever it was.
Shout out to Paul Batman.
Yeah. I thought it was the greatest trick to periodize all of the aspects of training and performance and to put it all on one annual plan. I thought it was amazing. And it
Yeah.
introduced me to Excel, which has been a love-hate relationship ever since. And but what strikes me as interesting is that I don't use a lot of it now. You know, you could argue you use a form of periodization, which you do, but essentially the periodization is based on when are we playing and work backwards. And that is your periodization. And if you're in the
What
NBA,
about
it's every.
all right? What about preseason, mate? You've just come through your 472nd preseason with AFL. And like it's 15 weeks of go, go, go. You're
Good
not
question.
playing. Now, what's the difference? So where do you see periodization fitting in there?
Yes and no. Yes, you do. So I shouldn't say I don't use it anymore. But now the AFL has 3 weeks pre-Christmas.
Oh, yeah.
You're not good enough to play in the finals, which my team hasn't been the last couple of years. Then 2 weeks till they have 5 days off. Then another 3 weeks till you start playing games. And then you
So,
play trial games, which in every club around the country is these are massively
yep.
important games, even though they're trial games. But they're massively important. We want to get confidence. We want to sell memberships. We want to do all that sort of stuff.
Yeah,
There's
yeah, yeah, yeah.
no correlation between trial game success and season success, but you cannot tell anybody that at that moment. And so then you've got to go, okay, well, we're playing a game, so we better back off. So, of course, there is some preseason periodization, but nowhere near as much as what the commentary or the
You would think. All the
young
education, all the education.
education that we were offered, and I read reams of books that I had to order from the US way
Yeah.
back on it. So your take on it?
Well, mate, I think you're absolutely right. I think we're so often these days bound by our logistics. The calendar is set, like they're telling you. And interestingly, this is how this subject sort of came up a bit. And I'll share my view on it as we go along. So I did a review. I was asked to review a periodization plan for a college football team just in the last week. So I've done that, had a look, and it was Tudor Bomber-like the way it was set out, right?
Yep.
And for anyone who doesn't know, in case you're unaware, Tudor Bomber is like the father of periodization. He put everything in boxes, and there was some research to it. I don't know how much, but then subsequent to that, you read certainly a lot of the Russian and European texts, Vladimir Zatsyorsky, Verkhoshansky, a lot of the stuff of the Russian stuff with lifting was very periodized, but very Olympic, right? So you don't have competitions for a period. Anyway, so I saw this plan and I went into exactly the same mode as you're going, like, well, okay, what are the logistics here? When can we train? When can't we train? When's the opportunity? But the thing that struck me the most was those core sort of values that you hark back to. What's your cycle like? Is it two on, one down, three on, one down, four on, one down, five on, one down, whatever? I'm not arguing for one or another, but what is it? And then you look at things like, Zaz Yorskiel talk a lot about the rule of 60, so that your deload week should be 60% of the load of your heaviest in the preceding phase. Now, I mucked around with that in the AFL for years. Like, I never got to 60%, never, never had a coach allow it to go that low. But I certainly saw if we could breach, if we could get under 20%, like if we could drop by 20 to 25%, I saw massive health benefits. I saw players not breaking down, the colds and flus on long periods. But if I hark back to the program I looked at, one of the observations I made was, well, there's periods where there's just builds in load for like 6 weeks. And so my question to that is, should you be looking at that and saying, hey, is this two 3 week blocks, or can I really keep them going for 6 weeks?
So
Now,
it not depend on the group that you have and
could do, and it could depend on where you start. So I'm not saying anyone's right or wrong, but I think there's got to be, and I look forward, I'm going to have the discussion with the team involved later, but I think you've got to be in a position to say, well, validate, can we keep going? Is there a way to keep going? Like 6 weeks, 6 week builds, depending on where the athlete's at. And the not the issue, but the observation I made in this program was that their highest block of work didn't come until their camp that preceded them playing. So they were building up. There was no kind of peak in training, and then okay, let's hold for a bit, stabilize, let the body adapt to it, and then we'll go. It was like we're here and now we're playing. So if I go back, my opinion is that I think there are elements of periodization that we should understand and utilize, but you're going to have to manipulate them based on what you've got. If you've got a really young team, right, you're going to struggle to hold load early. You might need to give more time. And I will say, I've used with older players, particularly in rugby union, the great George Cregan. We used to run a 3 week cycle, 2 weeks load, 1 week down, 2 week load, 1 week down, because particularly with his lifting, he only needed 2 weeks here and he could drop down and maintain no problem. Equally, you could keep him fresh going in. And I still think at times we send players into games completely overdone.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Two Coaches and a Coffee is proudly sponsored by SpeedSig. If you work with field sport athletes, understanding how your players generate and control speed is critical to your effectiveness as a coach, medical practitioner, or sports scientist. Acceleration, speed, and deceleration not only can be generated using unique individual strategies, but those strategies change as an athlete gets stronger, as they develop better skills, most definitely when they suffer injuries, and as the athlete gets older. Does your athlete monitoring program cover these variables? SpeedSig uses IMU GPS technology that your team is already using to provide biomechanically validated and reliable data that describes how an athlete generates and controls speed. Check out our website for more detail at speedsig.com. Now back to Two Coaches and a Coffee.
Yeah, that's an interesting one for me. And maybe it's a conversation because we've got a few other things to get through, a conversation for another day. That match day minus strategy. And I reckon because I've done, what number did you say?
472
pre-seasons. That means I've done about the same in-seasons. And or I've supervised people who've been doing those in season. And the different models, I could give you eight different models that have won the last eight premierships in the AFL or the last eight Premier Leagues and Everyone's going with a different model. So anybody who comes to this model works and this is the only
No.
model you can do is.
I'll make an interesting observation of last year's AFL. I know of a team that ran a certain program. They ran a 2 day, like two heavy training days up until the bye, so the first half of the season. Then the second half of the season, they made a choice to drop down to three, to one, and had one heavy day in a week. And they back half used swimming parlance. They reverse split. They negative split. They went really well. They flew the second half of the season.
Yeah, okay.
So there's no question, mate. There's no one model. But what I think there should be, and my opinion is that you've got to put something to paper. You've got to be saying, well, like if you go to a coach and you're not giving them parameters, we're going to be lost. That would be my opinion. So you get something to paper, but there should be some semblance of biological adaptation. Where are we taking them up? When are we bringing them down? When are we doing, is everything happening at once? So are we going volume aerobic, volume speed, volume lifting all at once, or are we mixing it up? So I think a periodization, I remember with a very unique coach in Australian in AFL, sat down when I first met him and he said, "What's your opinion on periodization?" I just gave him a general overview. He said, "Well, I think it's all shit." But the reason I think they think it's all shit because it's a plan of some nature, and when there's a plan, they're constrained. I learned off a great old bull, Kelvin Giles, great old bull of strength and conditioning, British track and field, Broncos rugby league in Australia, famous for that. He used to say, write your plan in pencil and just make sure the most important people have erasers. Because you're going to have to change, but you've got to have something. You've got to have a plan. And it's at some point, some understanding of when things are going to go up and down. Yeah, it'll change. But I definitely think there should be echoes of the past,
For sure. No, there's no doubt there should be that. It is dictated a bit too by games, but when you
Of
have the
course it
opportunity
is.
to push and pull,
Of course it
then.
is. The one that sometimes loses me is the old period, the old Tudor bumper model where it's the whole team. Well, actually, you might have, depending on your group, you might have 42 different plans going because they're all different cats and you're manipulating different things. But I do think it's like I always say to my son with music, man, you're playing guitar, learn the basics. We learn the chords. Then you can go and play all the fancy stuff. But if you don't ever learn the basics, you're kind of out the back door a little bit. Anyway, I got one for you. I got one for you. Great, very interesting conversation. Just in the last couple of hours, we talked about the Achilles thing in the NFL all year, or also the beginning of this year. There's been a couple of blips in the AFL. I've kind of been like a bit of a dog with a bone. I haven't let it go. Been talking to a radiologist, a very good friend of mine who has published a lot in this area in radiology and medicine in the tendon space. And he's telling me that there's the accuracy that he's getting to at the moment, independent of UTC because of what they've learned and what he can move with, is fantastic. And they're doing a lot, getting a lot more positive results. But the cornerstone to that is quick question I asked him. Was do you think it's plausible that tendons just explode, or would we think that there must be a pathology underneath? He said there has to be something underneath to make those massive changes. Yes, I think there's going to be the car accident events on a field where the kid gets put in the wrong spot and bang, it just goes, so be it. But the guy jumping on the sideline and then taking off in the Super Bowl had to have been something underneath. So I'm not saying we have a solution to anything yet, but I think we can't say the jury's out. I think we need to keep looking, and I think investigating surfaces and boots and all that is appropriate and necessary. But I do think looking at how we classify our athletes and how we understand their movement is critical, and it's not finished yet. A lot to go yet.
When you say the calf pathology,
Well,
Well,
Achilles pathology, like a tendinopathy.
yeah, so tendinopathy, but the detection of that and the assessment of that becomes,
Yeah.
yeah, the critical factor, and how we monitor that and
And
how we
this,
react to changes.
and yeah, and Berger, I think this comes back to that thing we always talk about with what we do here, which is talk hypothetically. We don't know what the athlete was reporting in the 4 weeks beforehand. So I've just good friend of mine, track and field athletes, just finished at the Australian Track and Field Championships. Didn't go particularly well, but she's been fighting Achilles tendinopathy for quite a number of weeks. She rings me up and we're talking through some stuff, and she goes, "Oh yeah, I'm fighting this thing." I'm like, "What do you mean? You're fighting it?" "Oh, I've been fighting it for about 6 weeks. I can still run. I can still compete. I'm just not very good." And I'm like, "Hold on, what are you doing? Like, so she's doing isometrics, but we come back to that piece of there's performance." And so if I'm just putting my hand, for people listening, I'm putting my hand arbitrarily in the air. But she's able to continue, but performance has markedly dropt.
If the performance has dropped, that's
Yeah.
the telltale sign. But there are some
I think
people
it's,
with Achilles, presentation of some sort of pain or Achilles
discomfort.
pathology, discomfort, but are still able to perform.
Oh,
And
exactly.
that's hamstring
But
tendon, all that.
yeah. Oh, absolutely. But I think you've hit the nail on the head. If it's symptomatic, when you've got, let's say, particularly in Achilles, you've got large scale observable changes, like you've got swelling, like the Achilles is larger on that
Yes.
side. You've got a visible atrophy on, say, the medial gastroc on that side. You've got, there's things there that you should be dealing with. Now, we don't know if the 23 Achilles in the NFL had any of those things. There's no data on that. But I think we've got to not beat it up so much that, hey, this is an epidemic. People might be having the discussion exactly like you're saying. Yes, we've got it. Yes, we know what it is. We've got it, but we've got to go. We've got no choice. It's the Super Bowl. I'm going. But from a practitioner's perspective, for me, like I only, we talked about this the other week about reviewing yourself. As much as I'm happily a lunatic entrepreneur at the moment, if I had to step back into a job next week, let's say I step back into the Adelaide Crows, you move on. What would I do? What would I do if I was confronted by an Achilles? Like I pride myself in continuing that practice. So yeah, I think we've got to keep looking. And what would you do? At what point would you make a change?
Yeah,
So
it's a tough one.
it's
I
very
reckon
challenging.
I can think of a couple of examples where we've managed Achilles tendinopathy or Achilles presentation or pathology for a full season.
Yeah.
And the players
But
played.
clearly the kids, they play. But still, clearly they still played well.
Yeah, they
Because
did.
you can't, if you're keeping them on the field and coach is going, "What the hell's, Steve Gerrard doing? He's not running." Well, he's got Achilles tendinopathy. Well, get him off the field and fix it. That's where it ends up.
Well, then we take him off for 6, 7 weeks, or do you want him to keep playing? Because
Well,
even him at 80% is pretty good.
is better than everybody else. And that's then the
Yeah,
judgment call. But then that's the
exactly.
judgment call of what performance is.
Exactly.
Like,
So,
yes, I'll accept Steven Gerrard at 80% because that's better than everybody else's 100.
yeah.
No brainer, let's go for it. But I will say I have seen maybe not players of that magnitude, but certainly Brownlow medal level in AFL not performing and have an issue. And you say, "There's the issue, shouldn't play." And you say it over and over again. And then he plays, and then something worse happens, as in the tendon goes kaput. And all of a sudden, you're the idiot high performance manager who can't prevent
Cause the
injuries.
injury. Yeah, exactly.
Like, you
No,
can't do more than say don't play.
we've all
Like
lived in
the risk is
those
too,
situations.
yeah. We should get t-shirts made up. Me too.
Last one for you. We've got 5 minutes left. The
Good, mate. What do you
One of the
got?
most exciting days in the sporting calendar for anybody who follows US sports is coming up, and that's the NFL draft. When you were thing that I like about the draft is obviously the theatre of it, and they turn it into a 2-day event, which they're trying to do here with the AFL as
Oh,
well.
massive.
The thing that I don't like about it being on the inside is the complete ignorance on what data we should be looking at that leads to career success and what data we should be throwing out.
Well, give us a bit of background, Darren, because it's worthwhile people knowing that your PhD research as a younger man with much prettier hair and more of it and all the rest of it was exactly in this space. So, man, get on your high horse and give
We
us a
looked at,
quick.
I used Will Hopkins, and those who know statistics know that Will's a mad scientist and one of the best statisticians, applied statisticians out there. Used him, and we looked at predicting career success from A, the draft. So 10-year career success, we looked at the 2001 draft and 2002 draft, and we looked at, by the time I got around to publishing it, 5 and 10 year career success in 2010 and 2011. How many games, career success dictated by how many games did you play? And there's confounders like high draft picks go to crappier teams, so they more of a chance of playing games. And Will accounted for all of that. So for anybody who says, yeah, but answer to Will, not me.
Mixed effect modeling is what he used, I believe.
Yeah, it was unbelievably complex. So much so we used these Monte Carlo simulations. So much so that we had a computer running for about 8 days straight with all the simulations for each simulation. Anyway, and what we found is that the draft itself was a poor predictor, but when you combine the draft with some metrics that we collected during games when those kids were playing games, and those metrics were around high speed and sprint per minute. The draft was an X draft plus the games or metrics during games were an excellent predictor of career success. And by the margin of like 10 games per season, which is half a season worth of success. So those metrics were the agility, the 20-meter time trial here in Australia. I know they use 40 yard in the US. And weight was important in the positive. And then that combined with high speed and sprint meters per minute were excellent career success predictors. But if you took the draft by itself, no matter what combination, and we combined everything over and over again, it was hopeless.
Yeah. But that's the thing of it, isn't it? Like, I was thinking when you spoke earlier, I had a CEO sit me down once and say, "What's your job?" I said, "Oh, I'm the head of performance, whatever." He said, "No, you're in the entertainment business. Your job is entertainment. You just got to put bums on seats. That's all that matters." Which, when you look at the draft, is what that is. I guarantee that although you know this, even in our little world of AFL, there's that much other research done on the back end that I feel like the 100 kilo, the 220 pound bench press for as many reps as you can do is really for the crowd. And it's tradition. It's a big tradition over there, like massive. And some of the
For
reps
sure.
they get out is unbelievable, right? Just
Yeah.
insane. What I do find
And
interesting.
commentators still say it. They still say, oh, he's a 4.98 40-yard dasher. And
Well, they've only just started using timing lights. It used to all be hand timed. So the variability between you and me and the next guy was unbelievable. But
I listen to the odd NFL podcast, and these are people who've been in clubs saying, I mean, we got the official times, but no, we took our scouts were timing it on the line. I'm like, oh my goodness.
yeah, it's a bit like Moneyball, isn't it? That scene in Moneyball where Brad Pitt's sitting there and going like, "What are you guys doing?" The scouts, and they're going, "Well, he dances well on a night out, and he talks to good-looking girls, so he must be good." You know, that's all the skill. But you would think in this day and age, particularly in the NFL with the zebra stuff, where they're doing LPS, local positioning system data on every game, they would know. They would be.
I guess the thing about that is as well, the answer to that might be, okay, we'll assess them using a skill battery, which both the AFL and the NFL do. The problem is there's probably the top 20% of draft people in the NFL don't test because I'm not going to test there. I've just played 4 years of college or 3 years of college. Go and have a look at the tape. I'm not
Yeah.
going to throw for you here. So yeah, there's a number of ways in which they do it over there. But I will still, if I have a chance, Jason, be watching, and
Oh, yeah.
I'm looking
Well, I
forward
tell
to
you,
it.
in the physical performance industry, then one of the big ones that you see is how many guys did you work with that got drafted?
It might
And
there'll be Instagrams aplenty of
yeah. And
love.
the 40 meter sprint's a big one. The guys will say, how many did you get in the top 10? And they're talking small margins of gain, but these cats are fast. I mean, they're fast. They were fast when they started. Like, yes, we made them a bit faster, but at that end of the market, getting guys running, low fours over 40 yards. I mean, those guys are genuine speed coaches. They're track and field almost.
It is
Anyway, mate,
good.
listen, we need to move on with the afternoon's shuffle. You have a good afternoon. Best of luck for the weekend. We got Anzac
Cheers.
Day games coming up in Australia. So, man, you have a good one, and we will speak next week and go from there.
Cheers, Jason.
Thanks, group.